Hands come to order. It's Monday, the 14th of March, 2011. We have members here, Representatives Jewell, Representative Tammy Wilson, Representative Gutberg, Vice Chair Fairclough, Stoltz, Co-Chair Thomas, Representative Dugan, Representative Edgman, Representative Costello, Representative Newman, and LBNA Chair and Finance Committee Alternate Mike Hawker will be sitting in on the meetings, participating in debate, but not voting on amendments or any, not voting in the committee, but participating in discussion. And Representative Guerra, I believe, will be joining us, Chris. Today, we will have a presentation of House Bill 110 by Commissioner of Revenue Brian Butcher and Deputy Commissioner Bruce Tangeman. Just going to have the presentation of the bill today, and as long as that takes, and then we'll adjourn this meeting and go to the next step of the process. We're anticipating about 2+ weeks of hearings in this committee, and I want to do it shorter, but probably on. This is going to require a thorough and thoughtful process on such a substantive matter, and I appreciate everybody being willing to invest the time and having the patience to sit through. There are going to be some long meetings, and including a one trip to South Central for hearings right now the tentative agenda for that is ANCSA Corporation leaders and their business partners. With the agenda with the participants still being firmed up. With that, I'd like to invite, welcome Representative Guerra, and I'd like to invite Commissioner of Revenue Brian Butcher and Mr. Tangeman up to the table to present your bill. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brian Butcher, Commissioner Designee of the Department of Revenue. With me is the Deputy Commissioner for the Tax Division, Bruce Tangeman.
Today is your presentation, so we'll be following your lead on putting your explanation and why this is the governor's priority bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The goal of House Bill 110 is to make changes to our tax system that will make Alaska more competitive both nationally and globally, produce more jobs for Alaskans, and increase Alaska's oil production. This is about Alaska's future. The recent projection that North Dakota will pass Alaska in oil production over the next 5 years is a real wake-up call. We know the federal government has been a deterrent to development in Alaska, both in OCS and federal lands. As a result, we need to maximize the production we get on our state land. Many of the credits and incentives that have passed over the last few years have helped, but still production continues to decline. We know there is still a lot of oil yet to be developed in the state on state lands. There are two main goals of House Bill 110. One is to develop fields currently unexplored and to get more production. Number two is to get more production out of the legacy fields that currently provide over 80% of the oil that goes through the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. And as we're all aware, oil provides in excess of 85% of the revenue to run our state's government. The challenge is significant. The bulk of the easiest to recover oil has been recovered. We're now looking at producing viscous oil, heavy oil, and also developing in areas with very little to no infrastructure. So the challenge is greater than it's been previously. This is the main piece of a multi-tiered process that the administration is looking at to increase production in the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. It also involves, in addition to this, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and their Roads to Resources program. Department of Natural Resources is also focusing on improving and expediting the permitting process. The Department of Law, as we know, is tackling many of the federal roadblocks that we have. The Department of Labor is working to get Alaskans trained up for additional work as a result of this and other projects in the future. And and the Department of Environmental Conservation is continuing to work to make sure that development that is done is continued to be done in an environmentally sound manner. As I just mentioned, the goals of House Bill 110 are improve the investment climate for both existing players on the slope as well as to invite new entrants in. It's to create jobs for Alaskans, excuse me, and it's to increase production and extend the life of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. As we're aware, in January we had a shutdown of the pipeline for almost a week, and in the extreme cold of the wintertime on the North Slope, we got into a situation where it was very eye-opening to all of us on how fragile that pipeline really is. We were threatened with it freezing up, and the fact that only one-third of the pipeline is still full compared to the way it was in the past alerted us to not just the amount of production that comes out of the state, but what the longevity of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline system is, because once it gets to a point where it can no longer provide the work that needs to occur, it's not that our production would continue at a lesser amount, it's that this pipeline system would just shut down. Anything less would not be able to move down the system, and up until that point there would be an increased amount of work, an increased amount of money that would have to be spent in heating and other things to keep the oil flowing. That's going to be more expensive and is also going to cut into the funds that would come to the state treasury.
So, Garrett?
Yeah, in this and other presentations, I keep hearing the term the pipeline shutdown, and I have this recollection that the TAPS owners a number of years ago did a number of retrofits so that the pipeline could operate at a lower amount of volume. Not that we want to get there, but
we're gonna have a pretty thorough discussion with Admiral Barrett at the end of this week. So let's I want to let them continue with the cadence of their presentation. We had talked earlier about not getting into long questions. So proceed, Mr. Butcher.
Slide four, I'm sure you've all seen. It's a slide beginning in 1977 showing a quick ramp up in production to a fiscal year 88 peak of a little over 2 million barrels of oil a day, and then the rather swift decline in the years following that. From 1988 and the peak to 2010, the barrels per day has dropped over 68%. From that, it's been an average of between 5 and 6% a year decline. Legacy fields continue to decline, but as we look out and to 2020, we still expect half of the production in the state to come from these legacy fields. So there needs to be a focus not just in bringing new fields online, but continue to get oil out of the fields that have been producing. Slide five gives us a look at the forecast from the Department of Revenue's fall forecast book. Historically, back to 2000 as well as ahead to 2020. And as you'll see, the light gray is currently producing fields, and where we see them going out for the next 10 years, you see that going under the more traditional decline curve. These are the easiest or the most certain for the department to predict in terms of what we think we're going to get for production. The darker gray are the fields under development. Those are fields such as Liberty that are currently having a lot of money put into it, a lot of work put into it that aren't producing yet, but we expect to be producing in the next couple of years. And the most speculative are the dark black under evaluation. Those are fields and areas that the industry is looking at seriously. They have not put them under development yet. We anticipate that there's a possibility that would be happening in the future. And those are ones that potentially this bill could be a great benefit to, as well as other fields and areas that aren't listed as under evaluation because they haven't been considered as seriously as a result of our current tax regime. We'll be having a production forecast meeting later on in the week where we'll have our production economist Frank Molly available that can dig into this in a little bit more detail and give you a little bit more separation of what each of them mean and how we get to the different levels and where we see things moving out of the future. Slide 6 takes a look at the North Slope development drilling. These are development and service wells. Development wells are wells in existing fields that aid in the development of the field. Service wells are wells, injection wells, that are necessary to work the development wells to get more oil out of the fields. And you can see it overlaid in green with the ANS West Coast price. So you can see through the early 2000s, around a little over to a little under 200, and that slowly dropping, popping up a little bit in 2010 with the price of oil. But mostly we're showing this slide to kind of give you an idea of what the development wells are doing. And then the next slide will show you what the exploration wells are doing. So this gives you a little bit of perspective between current wells being drilled and wells that are actually exploring on the North Slope. Slide 7 gives us a good snapshot, again overlaid with the price of oil, on where the exploration wells have been drilled. You can see that 2007 was at 18. ACES passed at the very end of 2007. The decisions on where to explore for 2008 had already been made at the time of the passage of that legislation. And then as a result, you can see in 2009, that dropped to 9. 2010, it dropped to 4, with two of those four exploratory wells occurring in Point Thompson, which we already know of the known reserves there. It wasn't true exploration. It was exploration wells occurring in a field that's already been developed. And in 2011, Department of Natural Resources says we will have one exploratory well drilled. There's a lot of oil left in Alaska. Cumulative production through 2010 from the beginning of the opening of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline has been over 16 billion barrels. Department of Resources estimates the remaining North Slope reserves exceed 5 billion barrels still out there. The geology-based estimates of total oil volumes are much higher. For instance, in this 5 to 6 billion barrels, we do not include approximately 20 billion barrels in the giant Agnew deposit, or offshore volumes from the Chukchi or Beaufort Seas in our forecast. When we get to a point where, as an example, heavy oil gets to the point where it's economic to produce, we would then factor the Agnew deposit into our revenue forecast. This is a kind of a detailed slide showing the areas of the North Slope and its oil and gas activity going on in the 2010-2011 years. The circle is, the dark shaded areas on top are where Prudhoe Bay is, Kuparuk, and most of the production has been in the last three decades. The more uncertain area that has not had the exploration that the more northern area has is circled in red. That includes much of what Armstrong and now Repsol are looking at, as well as what Great Bear is looking at in terms of unconventional oil. The governor's identified this region of the North Slope as state land that we should be helping encourage development and exploration for. And the 15% tax credits, or excuse me, the 15% oil taxes in the unexplored fields, this is one of the focuses of where we think that can be a benefit. Uh, How can we reverse the trend that's going on in Alaska? These are some of the sample investment decision criteria that we put together that oil companies look at when deciding where to invest. Obviously, in prospectivity, what the potential is out there, what they see as available. Geopolitical stability, and that's something that is of tremendous benefit to the United States, as an example, over some of the Middle Eastern countries. Regulations, access to resources, development permitting, environmental constraints. This is an area that we've been challenged federally, but we have been, the state itself has been a strong positive in that. And operations, where the existing infrastructure is, experienced workforce availability, market proximity, and costs. And this is an area that Alaska is challenged if you compare it to Texas or North Dakota or many of the other oil-producing states. Our infrastructure is extremely limited. Our workforce availability, also very limited. Our distance from market makes it much more expensive. And so it's not really an apples-to-apples comparison when a company looks at investing in Alaska or investing in another state because it's much more difficult to do business up here. The one thing we can do and we focus on doing in this bill is doing something about the tax regime. Because when you combine all the other challenges in Alaska with the high tax rate here, it just makes it all the more difficult. And I think that's why you're seeing, as the price of oil has gone up over the last 4 years, a tremendous amount of investment in North Dakota and Texas and many other states and many other countries, but yet exploration dropping to almost a trickle in the state.
Mr. Chairman. Yes, Mr. Dugan. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are we going to get a chance to ask questions about this presentation?
We're going to just have them lay out, as we discussed previously, that the administration was going to have a fairly uninterrupted
And when that's done, are we going to get to ask questions?
Well, we'll see how the time goes. But we have tomorrow is when we had planned to dig in the bill and start the more vigorous questions part.
And the commissioner's going to be back?
Yes. He's here. He's here at our disposal.
Thank you.
I thought we had gone over this. They were going to have a clear shot at presenting the bill, and then we'd start
getting... You may have gone over this, Mr. Chairman, but I didn't hear clearly whether or not we were going to... Yeah.
But no, I appreciate it, and I'm sorry about the confusion. I'll try to get through this. There will be plenty of grilling and questioning opportunities. Commissioner Butcher.
Mr. Chairman. Now, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to give a production tax overview. I know this is something that we got into a little bit with our production revenue forecast meeting a month or so ago, but I'd like to touch on it again. When looking at taxes, you need to understand the production tax value, the PTV, which is the market price of oil less the transportation costs and allowable lease expenditures. The allowable lease expenditures include both operating and capital expenditures. The current base rate tax on the PTV is 25%. This bill would not change that base rate. It would remain 25%. The progressive surcharge rate in current law is triggered when a company's PTV reaches $30 a barrel. From $30 a barrel to $92.50 a barrel, the surcharge adds 0.4% to the tax rate of each additional dollar in PTV until the combined tax rate reaches 50%. The additional tax isn't just taxed on that dollar. It's taxed on the entire cost of the barrel. So as a result, that's why we see when we get into the higher progressive rates, tax rates, marginal tax rates of 93% of government take, because it's not just taking in tax on that dollar, it goes back and adds an increased percent to the entire amount of the barrel. That's one of the changes in this bill. We would change it from that progressivity to brackets, where we would apply a tax rate with each additional bracket, but the increased tax would only apply to that piece of the barrel. We wouldn't go back and apply it to the entire cost of the barrel, which will make a not as steep progressivity slope and marginal. And the state would continue to take more in high oil prices. It just wouldn't be as steep. And we'll have slides as we present this that will give you a comparison and show you the differences between the current law and the differences in the passage, if the passage of HB 110 were in effect. From $92.50 a barrel up to almost as high as we would, I can ever imagine seeing the price of oil, $33.42.50 a barrel, the surcharge drops from 0.4% to 0.1% for each $1 increase in the PTV until the combined tax rate reaches a cap of 75%. HB 110 would reduce the cap to a maximum of 50%. How the tax is calculated, you take the base tax rate of 25%, and then you add what the progressive surcharge is, what has been applied above 30%, and that gives you the total taxes before credits. Then you then subtract the credits that have been applied against the taxes, and that gives a final tax bill of the total production taxes owed by that company. And this gives, I know you've seen this slide before, this gives you kind of a walkthrough of our projection of FY12 production tax, what our fall forecast per barrel estimate is for FY12 of 8267, what our estimate of production is, 622,182 barrels. I'd like to also point out that we'll be coming out with a revised spring revenue forecast probably the last few days of March to early April, and so these numbers will be changing. That, when you multiply the two together, that gives you the value of approximately $18.774 billion. From that you subtract, and I'm going down the column on the far right, from that you subtract the royalty and federal barrels, which are not taxed, and that gets you down to $15.9 billion. You then subtract the transportation costs of ANS, marine transportation, as well as the tariff on tax, and that drops you down to 1.229 subtracted off the 15.9 billion. The deductible operating expenditures we're estimating will be a little under 2.5 billion. The deductible capital expenditures, our estimate is a little over 2.5 billion. And when you subtract that down, you get to, excuse me, the production tax value, which we estimate to be $9.675 billion for FY12. With that, you then take the base tax rate, which would be $2.4 billion off that number, and the progressive tax rate of 8.1%, which would be $785 million. That gets you up to $3.2 billion. And then our estimate for the credits that will be applied against taxes are $450 million. And when you subtract that, you get to $2.754 billion total production tax for FY12 after you've deducted everything that gets deducted. Once again, that number will be changing here in the next few weeks, but this just gives you a general idea of how this system works. Taking a look at the production tax credits overview on slide 15, this is currently what's in state statute. Qualified capital expenditure credit is 20% credit for qualified capital expenditures. Well lease expenditures outside the North Slope is 40%. After a bill passed last session by the legislature increased that, in particular to get more development in Cook Inlet. The carry forward annual loss credit, otherwise known as the NOL, net operating loss credit, is a 25% credit for a carry forward annual loss by a company. We have the small producer and new area development credit, which is up to $12 million a year for small producers and up to $6 million a year for production outside the North Slope and Cook Inlet. We have the alternative credit for exploration, which is 30% or 40% of eligible exploration expenditures if certain criteria are met. And then what passed last session, the Cook Inlet jackup rig credit, 100% to 90% to 80% for the first three exploration wells drilled using a jackup rig in Cook Inlet. And we currently have at least two companies, Escapeda and Buccaneer, currently working on potentially bringing jackup rigs up. So there seems to be an immediate effect of that credit on motivating companies to explore in the Cook Inlet area. Digging now, Mr. Chairman, a little bit into the components of House Bill 110. There are three major pieces to the bill, and then a number of other tweaks that the bill would also make to state statute. The first is what's been probably the most talked about, and that is a change to the progressivity rates and a cap. And just to briefly reiterate, it would change it from the progressivity that we currently have in state law to brackets that would work similar to how the how your federal income taxes work, where from $0 to $30,000 made, you pay 10%, and then from 30 to 40, you would pay 13%. And as you get up in earning more and more, you get into higher tax brackets. The higher tax brackets you work into does not apply to the entire amount of money you've made for that year. That first $30,000, you're still paying a 10% tax bracket on. It just increases as you move up as opposed to applying to all of the money that you made in that given year. So that's kind of the simplest way to kind of explain how brackets would work compared to how it currently works, where it goes back and picks up a higher and higher percentage of the entire
And Mr. Butcher, I'll interject. We have Mr. Marks, who is going to, from our legislative branch, going to be describing and available for questions tomorrow on this subject matter of bracketing. So we'll have a lot of chance to drill into this later. I guess drill in is when we're talking about oil. I meant to, anyway. It's probably inappropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The base rate would stay in statute at 25%. The second large piece of the bill has to do with exploring in leases or properties that have not been unitized or producing on or before the last day of the year of 2010. We would look at reducing the base tax rate reduction would go from 25% to 15% for those areas to try to motivate production and exploration in areas that have currently not had exploration over the decades of production that we've seen from the North Slope. The maximum cap on tax rate that we would look at reducing from 75 to 50% for these currently unexplored fields would go from 50% down to 40%. So we would basically just be shifting the tax rate down 10%. It would start 10% lower, and it would be capped 10% lower. The third major piece of the bill would be the extension of a 40% well lease expenditure tax credit to the North Slope. Currently, it's at 20% and was raised to 40% south of 68 degrees north latitude. We would look at having a 40% well lease expenditure tax credit uniformly on the entire North Slope to try to motivate additional development out of the existing fields of the North Slope. As a part of this, tax credits currently are required to be taken in 2 years instead of 1 year. It not only makes it difficult for the department to, not impossible, but more difficult for the department to deal with the tax credits because we're having to split multiple years. Every year is taking the second year of a previous tax credit and a first year of another two-year tax credit. The bill would move it from 2 years to 1 year, which also is of benefit to particular some of the smaller independents that have cash flow issues, that getting their tax credit in the first year instead of having split is a benefit to them as well. Ultimately, the revenue effect on this is negligible because we're splitting the same amount of money. It's just doing it in 1 year instead of splitting it out into 2 years. Another piece of the bill is the yearly tax calculation based on average prices and costs over a year as opposed to the way we're currently doing it monthly. And that's easier for the department to administer, and it's also easier for the industry to work things on a yearly basis as opposed to having to deal with the peaks and valleys of doing it on a monthly basis. Looking to the right of the slide, you can see when the effective dates are. The effective dates of the change in progressivity to brackets, as well as the new area 15% tax, and the yearly calculation would be 2013, January 1st of 2013, which would give the department time to work the regulations through and have the tax ready to go. The extension of the well lease expenditure credits from 20% to 40% would be January 1st of 2012. We believe that can be done sooner and doesn't need the lead-up time that the rest of it does. Slide 18 gives you an idea looking at the nominal production tax rate for what the number would be in law of the current law, which is in blue, as well as what HB 110 would change the base rate in the unitized fields to, which is in red. And then in green is the non-unitized fields that aren't currently producing or being developed at 10% less. You can see that, the brackets have been set up on the same progressivity curve as ACES is. It just, as I mentioned, would not go back and encompass each of the increases over the entire barrel, just the bracket. So we've kept the progressivity slope the same. We're just calculating it in a different way.
Sure. I'm Garrett.
I have a question about the slide. Am I allowed to ask questions about the slide? Oh.
Briefly, Representative Guerra.
When I look at the new tax rate slope, the red line, compared to the blue tax rate slope, the blue line, at $90 a barrel, we're not getting the same tax rate under those two systems. The red one, can you explain that for me, please? Because under those charts, it looks like we're getting the same tax rate, and I know that you explained before that we're not.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, can you explain your question?
Yeah. Under the chart at $90 a barrel, it shows that the tax rate is the same under the new law as it is under the old law, roughly 50%. But I know you said before that that's not the case, that with the bracketed system, we're not going to achieve tax rates like that. So can you explain to me where the loss is?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, the tax rates would be at the same place at that point. They would only be, that tax rate would only be affecting what we'd be looking at between $82 and, I mean, I don't know. Through the chair, Bruce Tangerine, Deputy Commissioner.
The bracket for that section is covers $80 to $92.50. So obviously, $92 will be slightly different when you're comparing ACES to the bracket because the bracket's covering a range as opposed to one specific power.
Through the chair, then. Then do you have a chart that shows the actual tax rate at $90 a barrel for all the oil under the new law compared to the actual tax rate under the old law? And if you do, just take your time and get to it.
And if you don't, have that for a future hearing. Representative Hawker.
I'm aware that that particular issue, which is the difference between nominal and effective rates, is intended to be covered by Mr. Marks tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Butcher.
Slide 19 takes a look at the marginal government take, marginal being what the percentage taken by government is for each additional dollar that the price of oil goes up. Here's where you can see a noticeable difference between HB 110 and what's under current law. ACES, the slope goes up much more sharply because, as I mentioned, it the increase applies to the entire barrel, where under HB 110, the take for the government would continue to increase as the price of oil went up. It just wouldn't be at the extreme rate that, as you can see, as we get up above about 92.50, PTV gets up to 93% federal and state government take and 7% producer. And that's something that I'm sure you've heard the producers show their concern of, which is they put so much money out there in exploration and everything on the front end, and if they're getting very little on the back end at high oil prices, it makes it much more difficult for it to pencil out for them compared to what they might look at in other areas and other places to invest. This has a breakdown of what the percentage share of the profit of current law ACES is based on the price of oil from $40 to $265. When looking at this, I'd like to remind the committee that when oil first began to be produced off the North Slope, Jay Hammond, who was the governor at the time, talked about what made sense to him and the legislature at the time, which was an even share between the producers, the state, and the federal government, kind of a one-third, 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 I'm sure you've heard. We certainly don't have control over what the federal share is. We do have control over what the state share is. And if you look at the price of oil over the last couple of weeks, it's been about $115. If you look at $115, the state share is at 57%, the producer share is at 28%, and the federal share is at 18%, or excuse me, 28% for the producers and 15% for the federal government. So as you can see, the state is taking between half and two-thirds of the shares of profit at the current price, with the producers getting less than a third, and then the feds getting less than that. And comparing HB 110 we have in front of you, if it were in effect today at $115, the state share would be at 45%, the producer share at 35%, and the federal share at 19%. You can see our share of the total profits continue to increase as the price of oil goes up. We're continuing to get our fair share in the governor's estimation of just short of 50% of profit. It's just not at the exceedingly high percent that we see under ACES. And then slide 22 shows the non-unitized fields where there's not currently any units or exploration going on. To incentivize it, we would be taking a smaller percentage. So at 115, you can see the state share would be at 38%, less than the legacy fields, but certainly in excess of a third of the total profits. And the producers would be getting a slight bit more at 40%, and then the feds at 22%. But you can see as it goes up, our share begins to increase, and the producer's share continues to decrease. So to wrap up, Mr. Chairman, the goals of House Bill 110 are to improve the investment climate for this state. As we've seen the price of oil increase over the last few years, we've seen tremendous increase in development in Texas, where it's had almost a negligible decline over the last decade compared to the state of Alaska, even though it's a far more mature oil-producing state than we are. And we believe that reduction in the, in particular, upper-level tax rates will do a lot to improve our investment climate. And as a result of that, most importantly, it will increase production. And the increase in production will help create more jobs for Alaskans. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Butcher. And as I, we didn't plan to take much more time than the presentation today because, as we said, we're going to have the consultant and the administration presenting the bill tomorrow, and we'll have a more vigorous question. Representative Dugan.
Mr. Chairman, at what point are we going to be able to put actual numbers to this presentation? That is to say, what each of these changes are going to result in terms of the financial picture of the state?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, we're going to be in front of the committee every day for the rest of the week. We're certainly going to be walking through the fiscal note, excuse me, not just on what our estimates are going to be on what we see the short-term revenue reduction be as a result of the passage of the bill, but we'll also be going into investment scenarios of where we see, laying out some scenarios basically that we see this bill creating in the future. It's impossible to try to say if this bill passes, we think we're going to get this, and it's going to mean this, but we can give you kind of a number of scenarios that can give you an idea about what we're looking at.
And Richard,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Butcher, did you just say that you didn't think you'd be able to tell us what the cost of this bill is going to be?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, we can give you our estimates on what we think the short-term cost is. What I was talking about is we're not going to be able to give you a specific 10 years in the future, this is the exact production that will result as a result of this bill passing. We can give you scenarios on where we see it, but as the governor has made it very clear in everything he said about this bill, we can lay out what the problem is, we can lay out what we believe the solution is, and we can lay out the scenarios on where we see it going, but ultimately it's going to take the industry stepping up here and talking to you and making a compelling case as to why it's going to make a material change in how they see doing business in the state.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Chairman, just one more question. At what point are we going to be able to go back over this presentation and ask the questions that naturally arise from it?
Sure. That's going to be happening over the next couple of days.
Thank you.
Including starting tomorrow. And some of the questions are more complex. The more lead time that these guys have to prepare, I know a lot of them arise through the process, but some of them you have in mind, as you just outlined, if we can get these, whether it's we'd be happy to facilitate through the combination of my office and Representative Hawker, who has the consultant, the supervisor capacity as the legislative budget chairman, the more lead time. And lead time is obviously different in a compressed schedule, but we'll probably get better information than we will.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to point out that I'm not actually smart enough to ask very complicated questions. Thank you.
Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the future, when we can get some answers on page 7, your slide for North Slope exploration drilling, I'd like the administration's perspective why in 2003 we only had one well drilled, and then as we speak either to producers or others, what they believe was the cause of the 2003 decline.
Representative Bura.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a question on fiscal notes. Mr. Butcher, do you plan on editing these at all based on the information that's come up from prior testimony? The one point I can think of is that it's come up in prior committees that there's a cost to the governor's proposal to tax on a annual rather than a monthly basis, that in 3 years ago, that would have, if we had done that, cost us about $600 million in lost revenue. That you had testified that maybe on average it might be $200 million or so in lost revenue, but there's so far no reflection of that in the fiscal note. So is that fiscal note going to be amended?
Through the chair, Representative Bura, we're putting a slide together that will show you what it would be out over a period of time, so you'll have an estimate on what that potentially would look like. Because clearly 2008, it was the most volatile oil price year in history. That is a year that you can look at and account for it, but it would not be the norm. But we'll give you that.
Through the chair.
Though
normally, if something is going to cost the state money, that shows up in a fiscal note. Are we going to get a fiscal note for that or just a slide?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, we will have that listed in the fiscal note. There will also be an adjustment with the spring revenue forecast, because those numbers are going to change as well. So the numbers we're looking at today are not going to be the exact numbers we'll be looking at in a couple of weeks when the spring forecast numbers are nailed down.
Representative Jewell and Representative Wilson. And then me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I'd be interested in seeing, I know some of this is, as it's laid out in this legislation, looking forward, it's kind of hard to project all the variables. But what I'd like to see is how this would apply looking back for the last couple of years. I would like to be able to see what this would generate in terms of taxes looking back and applied to years that we know where things have occurred. And if I could get that, I'd appreciate it.
Through the chair, absolutely we can do that. With the caveat being that would be showing half of the equation, which would be what we'd be seeing looking back at a reduction on tax, not what we'd be seeing in increased production as a result of that.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a couple questions just on the share of total profits on your graphs from page 20 to 22, and maybe at some point the explanation of why we're going to be giving so much more to the federal government. It seems like as much is going to go to the federal government as it will back to the oil companies, and if that's going to be in future.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, companies are able to take the percentage of their state taxes off of their federal taxes. So if we reduce we reduce the state tax, they end up having to pay more in federal taxes because they can't use the state taxes off of their federal taxes. So that's why we can give you a more detailed explanation if you'd like, but that's the general idea of why the federal taxes go up when we reduce our state taxes.
A little more details would be great at some point. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Newman and then Gettenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian, if I go back to page 6, North Slope Development Drilling. If we could get some type of a breakout, you know, we continually hear, I have continually heard, you know, we've got 157 wells drilled last year, and it's not really what I would presume new wells drilled. They're not exploration wells. Is there a way to get a breakout on restoration and redevelopment or R&R wells that were put out there where, you know, when we assume there's a new well out there and it's drilled, but a lot of times a company will go back, sit on an existing casing because they know its geological substructures are down there because of new technologies, the ability to go down there and recover some of that oil through new lateral drilling and expenditures like that. But it's not new exploration. Again, new technologies and changes in that. And so when we hear, you know, we've got these new wells drilled, and there's also an assumption that you're putting a drill rig out there and you're drilling a hole down into the ground, and that's not the case either, where you've got a hole down. You could have a dozen different wells coming off of one casing. And again, one that's been there for years, and just through R&R, going back and rediscovering, redeveloping those wells through new technology, changes through migration with oils into wells that have been existing wells. And if we could get a breakout on that, I think that give us a clearer picture on new exploration wells as opposed to work on existing wells. And I think that goes into the bill where it talks to credits or any improvements towards expanding development and drilling and access into Alaska.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, we will get that information to you. Also, just as a benefit to the committee, DNR will be here through most of our meetings. They were unable to make it today, and so they'll be able to give some insight into a lot of these more DNR, less DOR related questions.
And all questions, you are carrying the bill for the administration. You're going to be the conduit to get through the other departments. Is that a?
Yes.
We'll clarify that. So, Mr. Butcher will be directing traffic so that we have a cohesion of directed information, hopefully. Representative Guttenberg and then Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, earlier you said you were going to come back to us with some scenarios. And I hope when you bring those scenarios back to us, you also bring back the rationale or the discussion about why you think these changes are going to result in things, whether they're historic. Because what you're doing is, with this bill, is you're trying to change the behavior and create more production and development. But what led you to believe that these changes will result in that, at least in one of the scenarios, at least show us in historic content, what changes under other tax scenarios would have created these things that had changed, what the industry's behavior was when they were or were not doing development, and then when the tax structures changed, what changes happened then? And that would be very enlightening.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, we will certainly do our best at doing that. Unfortunately, we cannot have a lot of evidence in the state of the behavior of the industry on a reduction in taxes, because I don't believe we reduce taxes. We don't have a historical, in this state anyway, but we will see.
Well, at different times, the rates have been different, you know, and they have changed going back over those years. So You know, and what would happen, you know, when we see that chart that shows from 77, the production just spikes, and then it comes down, you know, and many people ask, well, where was, you know, where the tax rates were where, why weren't they developing whatever, because they knew production was coming down. They knew those same things were in front of them as well, certainly. You know, Alyeska was looking at in advance of what their capabilities were going to be. So there is a certain amount of evidence here. Certainly, you know.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg. Yeah, and those would also be good questions for the industry. I know we've received questions about, you know, how would the dip before in the tail end of ELF. Certainly a lot of factors play into that. The price of oil certainly is and what a company's forecast is certainly a big issue to take a look at as well. And I think that's why when you look at the spike of oil prices over the last few years and the increase in other states and the decrease in this state, it is such a kind of a shocking view to look at, because in general, other areas they've been increasing their spending on production and exploration because of the price of oil hasn't occurred here.
Representative Edgley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Butcher, we recently passed the operating budget out of this committee not too long ago, and it went to the House floor and passed and whatnot. And from what I remember of the co-chair's testimony, he spoke quite eloquently about how we've got just a handful of state agencies along with the retirement funds and debt service expenses and whatnot, basically driving about 75% of the general fund dollars that go into the budget. I guess my question is, along with the discussion we're having on revenue and economic development, which, you know, is a very pertinent and very timely discussion, is there going to be correspondingly within the administration some planning about what the year's looking forward, about what is going to be taking place in terms of digging in the savings to make it for the shortfalls, and then sort of, you know, building in projections for things like corrections and energy and education and everything on the spending side that we may not get to drill in as much as the revenue and economic development side that we are during this presentation?
Through the chair, Representative Medvin, yes, we will be presenting the slide view that we're currently working on. We're working on over the weekend that would show where we see the revenue picture overlaid with where we see the state budget with numbers and working with OMB, we would see as a reasonable increase, as you say, Medicaid and the things that we know are going to drive the budget higher. Try to give as realistic a picture, a snapshot as we can, of what the effect of this would be.
Thank you, Chairman. Just a quick follow-up. So for planning purposes, obviously we're projecting forward with all the assumptions in place that where this bill to go in effect, what would take place on the sort of the exploration side as well as the hopefully the revenue side down the road and what have you. But is there going to be detailed planning on the other side in terms of the expenditure side, the fact that you know, basically we're looking at a sort of a fiscal plan going forward a number of years as well?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, I can't speak specifically to what the governor's office and OMB is looking at. We've been, you know, in terms of where they see it, we've been looking at what would make sense. In our work with OMB, we've been looking at what would make sense more historically, looking at the past and where the budget would be going, to try to give as accurate a snapshot as we possibly can. But I don't know that they're factoring in, okay, you know, can we do Medicaid reform or on the non parts of state government that aren't being driven, what we do with corrections and that. I'd be surprised that we'd be getting into that much detail. We've been mostly looking historic, but we'll ask OMB to get back to
you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hey, Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Just two things that you said, Mr. Butcher. One, I just I might have misheard. You were talking about Texas, and at one point I thought I heard you say in Texas production was significantly increasing, and then at one point I thought I heard you say in Texas production had maintained but wasn't increasing. Which was it?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, the amount of company spending in Texas has been increasing. The actual amount of production has basically plateaued or been down a little under 5%, I think.
Down by 5%.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Then just in follow-up to Representative Guttenberg's questions, I just fair warning to you. He asked if you could model what would happen under scenarios where we had lower tax rates. And I will ask you, back in 2006, before we scrapped the L15 of the 19 fields on the North Slope, paid a 0% production tax or less than 1%. And you'll be getting some questions about that because that does seem to be a model of what happened under lower taxes. And at that point, production was declining about 6% a year.
Okay. Any other questions, Mr. Clipshire? No one. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just some of the things that have been covered here, and I've been looking at some of the questions that have been coming forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Brian, you know, some of these comments is the cost of the bill. When there's a cost, there's an assumption that the state's buying something, or there's an expenditure. And I think what we're seeing is a change in tax rates. So there's really not a cost to the bill, per se. And people are trying to figure out, as Representative Edgman mentioned, well, what about planning for budget shortfalls? Now, I think it would be my hope that through changes in tax structure, we'll have more production, so that that revenue stream remains neutral. And I like to somewhat phrase this, look at this in a different way, where if Carr's Grocery Store has bread for $1.25 a loaf, puts it on sale for $1 a loaf, are they losing 25 cents? Are they giving away 25 cents? Or do they hope to sell more bread? And possibly some other peripheral items along the way as a lost leader. And are they saving those jobs at the bakery at the same time and securing that? You know, so I don't know if there's a way to model that, how changes in tax rates have applied to different production levels. And that's why I was interested in the slide that we're looking at here now through restoration and rehabilitation legislation that we passed recently. Has caused more exploration to happen, has caused more oil, where we've actually had the decline in taps has slowed by better than 1% because of recent changes in that. So when we look at proof on how this is going to happen, I think we see some of that proof in the past on that. And I don't know if there's a way to go about and show that, particularly in questions with historical taxation or ELF, where there was little tax rates, but we've had changes in technology that now allow us to go back and recover some of those oils that weren't available at that time. Even though the tax rates were lower, why didn't companies produce? It wasn't just so much that the tax rates were lower, but the availability to get that oil out. The easy stuff is gone. In Prudhoe Park were there, and that's changed. And so the ability to get into those harder oils, harder to extract oils, new technology, but not for the fact of new technologies, we'd have a whole lot less oil right now. So I think that that's an important part of the discussion that we're looking at, and I don't know how you can model that, but I think that's a pretty important picture of what we're talking about here. And I think my goals of trying to see what we look at here is changes in this, how it's going to produce more oil, extend the length of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, 90% of the state's general fund revenue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And on other questions, let's try to make this more like Jeopardy, mostly in the form of questions. Representative Dugan.
I actually have a couple of questions.
Very good.
I don't need to anticipate you. The first is this discussion of changes in production. So is there information that you can give me as to what the department expects those changes in production to be under this bill? Which is to say, we know that everything's going 5%, 6%, whatever it is a year. What changes, what upward changes do you expect as a result of this bill? And I'd like to sort of see that beginning with the effective date of the bill and move forward. I recognize that this is a guess, but you know, you're proposing a bill that makes big changes, and we should be able to see what you expect from that, if that's all right.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, yes, we will be doing that. And like I said, it's impossible. You know, I think it's difficult to even try to say, okay, there's an infinite number of possibilities. Here's our one best guess. But we will give you a small range of scenarios.
Thank you. That's all I can expect, Mr. Chairman. I recognize that. But, you know, this is a big number here, and I'm expecting the administration to defend it on the profit side as well as defend it on the cost side. And that's all I'm asking for. Secondly, there was some reference to the industry coming in and talking about that. Mr. Chairman, have we got that scheduled?
They are. And I'm just filling in a few gaps. I was hoping to pass out the schedule for the first week, and we're trying to fill in a few participants and schedules. But actually, yeah, I had good intentions of getting this all done last night. But it'll be sometime today. We'll have the full week schedule laid out, and as much of next week as we can. And Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I heard you, Butcher, refer to the pipeline shutdown and the consequence of that shutdown in regards to drop in temperature of the pipeline. And you didn't say it, but for those listening, as I understood it, we restarted a pipeline with a hole in it because of that temperature dropping at a faster rate than we had anticipated. So if you could provide a model right now or in the future for us, the budget's no flow through that pipeline, because that's the risk that we're taking. That's the big wall that's in front of us. And some people don't believe that there's a wall there, that pipeline will continue to run. And I know that Mr. Chairman Alyeska may be able to speak to that more specifically as far as the operator of the line. But my understanding is we restarted a pipeline with a hole in it, and that's because of temperature drop. And my understanding is if it gets too cold, we have one big piece of licorice where we just take apart the puzzle and we ship it away.
Yeah. I think the retired rear admiral will provide the physics and all I think this is a pertinent question. You can provide what the net result was and how you would interact as a state, as the agency looking at the revenue side. So, Representative Garrett and Dugan. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. This is a scheduling question, and I know you probably haven't thought through it yet, but I'm in this awkward position as an Anchorage legislator where there are going to be two Anchorage caucuses these next 2 weekends, and I don't know what to do other than to go back for both of them or to flip a coin and have one of them chosen. But if there are really two, would it be possible for the Monday hearings not to start at 8 o'clock? So for those of us who go back for Anchorage caucus and get back on the 30 flight. It will be each of the next 2 weekends, it seems like, until somebody flips a coin and decides it's only going to be one.
Well, I believe we're tentatively planning on this weekend. We're off, but we're tentatively planning on going in the potential weekend hearings on the weekend of the 26th. So that you may have to flip a coin whether you want to be at the Anchorage caucus second meeting or be here. That might be the coin flip you do. But on the other one, we'll look at the I'm trying to see if we've already I'll have to look at that to see if we have an 8 a.m. meeting. I'm not sure we do on the following Monday, but
thank you.
We'll look at that. I know I'd asked Representative Wilson. She changed her flight to be here this morning. This is a big issue, so I know it's a we'll try to work through making this as comfortable for everybody as well. I think we can get a follow-up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow on with what Representative Fairclough was asking about, I don't know what the schedule is, but if the pipeline people are going to come in, I'd appreciate it if they speak to the question, and maybe they wouldn't have had this problem if they put a few more heaters in the pipeline than they've got now. It's the way I understand physics, and if I'm wrong, which I usually am with physics, Mr. Chairman, I'm hoping that somebody will be able to straighten me out. Thank you.
And Representative, you're a step ahead of me if you already have part of an idea of the physics. So you might be the genius between the two of us here.
A pretty small part.
So, with that, are there any other Right there, Costello, you're the only one that didn't say anything that I, but you can pass too.
Oh, well. since you asked, I am interested in a comparison of the nominal effective and marginal tax rates, and also a comparison in how we relate in other areas of the world in those three areas. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know you sent me a note for what that Q meant there. For folks with questions, and well, actually, let me back up half a step. You know, in the process that we've undergone in this building over many legislative years in evaluating various tax proposals, Legislative Budget and Audit Committee has been charged with securing and providing professional consulting services to support the legislators in their deliberation and understanding of the issues. A year and a half ago, with the LB&A committee, went through an extensive RFP process to secure the services, supporting both discussions under the potential gas line discussions as well as potential tax change discussions. We have available to folks on this committee, and I would emphasize through the chair, because we have to make sure we manage the process, but through the chair, we have available for anyone here that wants to spend time with Roger Marks, who will be presenting tomorrow, and just jumping ahead of his biography, then he spent, I think it was over 25 years as the state's senior petroleum economist, all that experience on the ground here in Alaska, as well as being a well-recognized professional in his field on an international basis. He's available to speak with anyone here who would like to speak. He's going to be in town this week. And I say, Tammy, you had Representative Wilson. You had, a couple of technical questions, that type of thing. We'd be happy to set up an opportunity for you to spend time with Mr. Marks for that. And likewise, for anybody else in the committee with questions, his presentation tomorrow will do a lot of analysis, economic analysis, sort of providing us foundational information to talk about the presentation and the bill as it's being offered up by the administration. We also, on a more technical basis at LB&A, we also have on contract through an RFP process the state's former tax director, who is an accountant. Roger is an economist. Dan Dickinson is an accountant. So folks with very more technical questions about the tax code, the production tax code, interrelationships of all our various tax statutes, Mr. Dickinson is also available for discussion and consultation. He's not in Juneau, but he is available. So we have these resources. They are intended to be for the use of the committee. Frankly, having them on hand and not utilizing them seems to be a bit of a waste. So we'd encourage everyone that has issues, has questions, would like to spend time, please work. And actually, well, Roger's in town this week. Feel free to get a hold of my office, and we can make arrangements to spend any time with folks that would like it here.
Commissioner Butcher, closing remarks.
Mr. Chairman, I just look forward to working with the committee. It's we're going to have many days and weeks to go through this, and hopefully we can get all your questions answered and have everybody comfortable with the bill.
With that, we have a scheduled meeting. We've scheduled numerous time slots for bills previously heard. We have a couple of bills in committee. One I had looked at was whether or not the speaker would have his sunset of departments, the Alaska Sunset Review Plan. But if that's available, that sounds like we'll see if they're ready to present that. Tentatively keep that afternoon committee scheduled so that we have that opening. But if you notice on our schedule, it's fairly vague with just House Bill 110 and bills previously heard. And we only have a couple of bills that we previously heard. I believe House Bill 80 and House Bill 166. So those are I don't think there'll be any surprises about those two bills. But our focus over the next couple weeks is going to be House Bill 110. And anybody that I think we filled out a whole pile of travel requests for the meeting in Anchorage on the 22nd. Anybody that hasn't, there's a limited number of seats available on those planes. I think we're down to, they were in the low 20s when we started out. So hopefully everybody has gotten on board. That we'll adjourn this meeting, and our next meeting will be on at 1:30 today. Pending notification, we'll call your offices well before the 1:30 so you can plan your day accordingly. And please work through my office and Representative Hawker's office for spending time with the individuals referenced. And please feel free to contact my office on anything you want to, on direction of the committee process. We want to make this as informative as possible. Make sure questions are answered. And we want, probably the best way to do that is as you have detailed questions, again, as much as advanced as possible. I know that's not always, sometimes questions are precipitated by what you've heard, but the expectation we might not always get the detailed answer right away, but as much as we can, these folks can help us prepare that they have more ready answers. Mr. Butcher.
The department, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The department would also be very happy to meet with any of the members that wanted to at any time of day or evening or whatever works for you. We'd be happy to find time.
With that, looking forward to the couple of weeks that we have together to spend on this as we get to bond on an important class project. With that, we're adjourned.